honor to like know that, you know, like I'm an OG.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even in my hometown, I grew up in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. There's a street called Airport Road, and it's now changed to MLK Boulevard. Is it Boulevard? I can't remember the exact ending, but it's named after Martin Luther King, which, you know, I support. But because I think especially I've been away so long, it's really, really hard for me not to call it Airport Road. And whenever I do it, people, even now, you know, they, again, it's very OG, but probably not necessarily the best way. But it's hard to let go of the names you grew up with. There is something something that neuroscientists talk about in our brains about memory and place being connected. And so this is one of the reasons why name changing becomes so fraught.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, and I'm really glad you decided to expand the article into a book, and I highly recommend our listeners check it out. It's called The Address Book, What Street Addresses Reveal About Identity, Race, Wealth, and Power. Deirdre Mask, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Oh, thank you so much, Alex. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Trace Bundy, Van Morrison, and Chris Wilson. To read a transcript of this show, go to seachangeradio.com. Stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast on our site or visit our archives to hear from Doris Kearns Goodwin, Gavin Newsom, Stuart Brand, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
As part of the All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign, Comics Take co-host, comedian Kimberly Nickel is producing a stand-up comedy show celebrating Women's History Month with a full cast of not dude comedians, sharing their best PG-13 rated jokes. The show will be live for an audience on Friday, March 28th at 6:30 p.m. Set your intentions, save your seat, RSVP at kbu.fm/comedy. KBOO Studio will be filled with an audience enjoying puns, impressions, and cocktails. It'll be better with you there. Join us in the back of KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland on Friday, March 28th, 6:30 p.m. This event will be recorded and played on the radio waves on Monday, March 31st at 10 p.m. Donations to KBOO are encouraged. If you don't show up on the 28th, no one will hear your laughter on the 31st.
This is KBOO Portland. You're listening to Free Culture Radio on KBOO FM in that beautiful bit of northwestern Avyayala that's currently referred to colonially as Portland, Oregon. Before we get started, I want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we're funded by you, the listener. If you enjoy this program, then please show your support and make a contribution today, or better yet, become a monthly sustaining member. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks! Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, it takes a village. As stated on its website, quote, "With a focus on community-based services, Youth Villages Oregon is committed to providing the most effective and cost-efficient treatment options to help build successful lives for children with emotional and behavioral issues, their families and youth aging out of state custody." End quote. To find out more about Youth Villages Oregon and the good works that they are doing, I'm joined by CEO of Youth Villages Oregon, Andrew Grover, and by Ethan Belisco. Andrew, Ethan, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
If I could get you to introduce yourselves, you know, who you are, what you do, that will actually help also with for listeners to be able to put a voice to your names. If you want to flip a coin, see who goes first.
I'll go ahead and jump in. My name's Andrew Grover. I'm the executive director of Youth Villages here in Oregon, as you just gave a little bit of a history on our organization. Yeah, I've lived and worked in Oregon since 1996 when I moved here specifically to work in the children's services space. It was really important to me, as you know, I was as I was coming up, I experienced a lot of hardship, a lot of kind of different institutional experiences in and out of supports. And so when I graduated college, I really wanted to get back into the field in a helping way, to help the next kid coming up that had hardships, you know, similar to mine. So I'm married, I have, you know, three beautiful children. I'm really blessed, and I'm happy to be here and talking about our work.
I am Ethan Belisco. I am an independent living program specialist, as well as a transitioned age youth who was in the foster care system. Yeah, I grew up and like kind of went through a lot of hardships. And just like Andrew, I went to college and I was like, you know what? I think what I want to do with my life is I want to help the kids that have gone through similar things like that and be able to make an impact on their life in a very positive manner. So.
You know, I have my script written out, and it's a little dangerous when I go out of order, but you mentioned a term, and I want to jump ahead to something here, because this is a terminology that I only learned recently, and that's this transition age youth. And as I understand it, the transition age youth, it's about the developing brain. It's an age demographic, people from like around 15 to 26 years old, when people are transitioning from being children and entering adulthood. I guess the first question, do I have that right? Or is there a better way of explaining it?
No, you have that right. There's, you know, there's a stage in everyone's development where you are, as you pointed out, transitioning from being a child to being an adult. And, you know, in our communities, in our culture, there isn't really a very clear, bright line when that crosses. But it's in that age range, 15 to 26. Our organization, as we'll probably talk in a little bit, you know, we focus on a specific subset of that population, which is youth who are aging out of the foster care system. So these are young people who were removed from their family at some point in their childhood, obviously through no fault of their own. Many of them bounce from foster home to foster home, and some of them are never reunified with their families and are never adopted. And so they effectively become adults while still in the foster care system. This is a group of people who faces really difficult odds, and we're here to help them.
So what are some of the challenges that young people in that age group are experiencing?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I can talk about it kind of from a big picture standpoint, and maybe Ethan can talk about it from, you know, through the lens of his own experience. But from a big picture standpoint, if you look at sort of the national data on young people aging out of foster care, you're going to see that one out of five will become homeless the moment they leave foster care, right? Half of them will struggle with substance abuse at some point in their lives. If you're a young man who's aging out of the foster care system, you've got a 60% chance of being incarcerated in your adulthood. And only 3% of this group is able to achieve a college education. So really tough headwinds that these young people are facing. If you look at the Oregon Department of Education data, less than half of the youth in foster care are graduating from high school, which is the lowest graduation rates of all young people in our state. So, you know, this is an incredibly bright, talented, driven, passionate group of youth who face difficult odds and need to have some support as they become adults.
Yeah, I would say, like, when it comes to a lot of the issues that youth face when they're in foster care, I would say one main issue is like consistency, because at least from my personal experience, I was bouncing around houses left and right. And when I did have those brief moments of like being able to go back to my family for a short amount of time, I was also bouncing left and right with them. And so just the consistency of like being somewhere, one place, one school for a majority of time, to be able to build relationships with friends and stuff like that. And that becomes a big challenge for youth because it shrinks their support system when they don't like already have one. And so like me, I would go to school and I was like out of school for like a year, and then I build this good rapport, these good relationships with a lot of kids there, and then I would move to a different foster home, or my family, we would move to a different city because we couldn't afford the cost of living in that place. And so consistency is definitely a major key, and behind consistency there's also support. And if we don't have support, foster youth in particular, it's very hard to, one, be like blatantly honest, motivated to be able to keep pushing yourself to reach higher goals when you don't really have someone in the background being like, you can do it. You've been through so many things, but I know you can succeed. And so I find that like another big challenge inside of the foster care system is consistency and support.
We're going to get back to asking about some of the other programs, but I want to go a little further. Now, how can programs for former foster youth prevent some of the negative outcomes?
Yeah, so we have programs for young people aging out of foster care that involve a really highly trained and supported specialist. Ethan is now one of our specialists in the program. They get matched up with youth who are needing support. They get referred to us through usually the Department of Human Services. But given this age group, some of them are self-referred. They'll call us up and say, I found you on your website and I really would like to get some help. And so we meet with them at a minimum one time per month. And we, you know, but some of these youth need a whole lot more than that. So we have a specialized program called LifeSet that is designed for youth who need more than that. Those youth we meet with weekly. We're available to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because often the crises that come up, the issues, I should say, that come up for these young people, they're not happening 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. So, you know, they don't have anyone else backing them up. So if we're not there, then, you know, things can get worse. But that's in our LifeSet program. They meet with these young people and just literally meet them where they are. We want to know what their goals are. We want to know what their ambitions are. We want to know what they see as some barriers that we need to overcome. And we put together a plan, as you can imagine, with them, you know, not for them, with them. As you can imagine, we focus on some of the big things that you could probably just, you know yourself: housing, jobs, education, applying for schools and financial aid and job training programs, and making sure housing is stable. I'm going to say that again, because we spend a lot of time working on housing stabilization and housing support. So those are some of the big things, but we also do a whole bunch of little things that you might not think of. Helping young people track down their birth certificates because they don't have them. They've never had them. Might be monitoring and repairing credit, you know, things along those lines, general financial literacy. So there's a whole lot of things that happen. It's organized around these weekly or monthly meetings, but then all the stuff that happens in between, we're just in communication and, you know, kind of helping them access services and kind of learn skills.
Little things, but the devil's in those details. Those are so important and so necessary and so tough if you don't know what you're, you know, if you don't know where to even start looking. So let's talk about the populations that you serve. You say you have people, actually, go back to transition age. When we talk about youth, when you're talking about young people that, who are using Youth Villages Oregon, the people whom you're providing services, young people, is that in that transition age, that 15 to 20? What are the ages? What are the ages, the demographics?
For this program, the one that is really focused on transition age youth, we're talking about kids who are on the early end, 14, but at the highest age, 23. We have a whole other program that we can definitely talk about here that's for children. That program is called Intercept. And it works with children as young as 2 or 3 all the way up to the age of 18. And Intercept is really designed for children who are struggling to stay safe in their own homes. So they may be facing mental health or other kinds of safety challenges that put them at risk of being placed out of their home into a residential program or into a foster care program or something like that. Or sometimes we work with these families as they're transitioning back home from those places. They may have been removed, and we're trying to help safely reunify them. So that's our Intercept program. So if you put those two things together, Intercept and LifeSet, our transition age youth programs, we work with children as young as 2, and we work with young adults up to 23.
I hate to talk about my own personal experiences, but at the day we're recording this, I am 3 years, 5 months into my own recovery, so I can't help but occasionally talk about my own personal experiences at that age. I think back, if I'd had someone to, you know, if I'd have known that there was someone I could have gotten help in just life figuring things out when I was 21, 22 years old, I don't think things would have been a little different. But we're here.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, Doug. I really do, because it brings a reality to it. And we firmly believe that, you know, giving just this really small amount of help at the right time. And we're not doing these things for these young people. We're helping them learn how to do it for themselves. And so that can change lives and also strengthen communities. So that's an important part of the whole discussion.
This is my conversation with Andrew Grover and Ethan Belisco with Youth Villages Oregon. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
I mean, I think going back to the programs like themselves, when it comes to ILP, we also provide a safe space outside of our sessions once a month. We do monthly peer-to-peer events where we can have kids in our program all join in and kind of all be together and give them like a sense of community inside of like, to kind of like ignore all the issues that are going on like at their home or in their environment. They kind of just get to come to our office or wherever the event may be and just be in a safe space for a few hours. And we provide full transportation, rather that be an Uber or a Lyft, or we have our specialists go out and pick them up ourselves. But I think it's another amazing thing that we have in our program so that those kids can feel safe and feel unified and feel like they have a sense of community when at home they may not. So that was my one piece I wanted.
I think that's, I couldn't agree more that helping these youth build a community is critically important. I'm going to give you an example, a really concrete example of that. And it starts with sort of kind of one of a statistic that might be surprising to people. 7 out of 10 girls aging out of foster care will be pregnant by the time they're 21. Now, this is kind of a surprising statistic, and it's not often thought about, but in that way, while we're working with these young women, we're also helping them with their children, and we're having an impact on the next generation, which is really important. But getting back to what Ethan said, we had one of those peer-to-peers maybe 6 or 8 months ago. 50 or 60 young people came, and 3 or 4 of them had children with them. And by the end of that peer-to-peer, they were all sort of huddled in an area, and they were exchanging phone numbers, and they were kind of talking about life as a kind of a young and sometimes single mother. And And, you know, fast forward to today, I know that they're still supporting each other, and they are building their own life as friends and, you know, peers. So that's just, it was a really fun example of what Ethan was mentioning.
That's brilliant. Community is. Well, here we go back to my own thing again, but that's one of the, if you're brought up in a messed up situation, then one of the things you learn is to not talk about your messed up situation. And so this notion of talking with other people about our similar messed up situations and exchanging and confidence, that's a...
Yeah.
Well, and it, that's cool. That's really cool.
It combats the loneliness and the isolation that comes. I mean, we're already living in a society where there's a lot of isolation. And, you know, I don't know if Ethan has a perspective on this, but, you know, I feel like these young people have experienced such difficulty that it sort of makes that isolation, that loneliness, even more difficult. So we're trying to chip away at that too.
Yeah, when it comes to the foster care system, I feel like it is very easy to feel alone. And I say that because some people who are in the system have such unique situations where it's very hard for others to relate to, or it's very hard to build a community because there are so many underlying issues. Like, you can't trust someone because you're so used to bouncing homes, or you can't you can't be able to trust someone to be there long enough because, like, you've moved on for, like, so long and stuff like that. And I think that community and, like Andrew said, with our peer-to-peer event, when it becomes like that, it, like, builds a sense of unity where you don't feel alone. Rather, it's, like, one text message being, like, hey, do you have a diaper I can have? Or rather, it's a group chat and you guys hang out once a month. Like, I feel like that makes such a big difference because you don't feel alone all the time, or you feel alone less. And I think that makes a big difference in youth's lives, especially ones in the system.
Back in 2015, State of Oregon was looking into concerns regarding agencies and nonprofits involved in child care and youth services. Youth Villages Oregon was one of them. December 2015, Oregon Health Authority and Oregon Department of Human Services released intent to revoke letters that they'd sent to Youth Villages Oregon that detailed some serious complaints, failed oversight, even abuse. A few months later, February 2016, Andrew, you became the new CEO. And you turn things around. In business, there's this thing about people talk about turnarounds, right? A business it's been doing badly. They bring somebody in, business recovers and starts performing well. It's the turnaround artist, they help the business recover. And given the work that Youth Villages does, I suppose argue that recovers is an inappropriate choice of word in this context. But I think actually in this case it is appropriate. Like I say, a few months after all this, February 2016, you became the new CEO, and, you turned things around. Youth Villages Oregon survived. It's doing well. It's still working with the state. You led Youth Villages Oregon out from under all those storm clouds and back into the clear. It's now, you know, clear blue. You're sailing under blue skies again. What was that turnaround like?
Yeah, I'll say that it was a really challenging time. We were deeply concerned about some of the issues that were being raised in what was then a residential program that we were operating. And one of the very first things we did was a root cause analysis. We wanted to get at, you know, what happened and how can we prevent such things from happening again. And ultimately, we learned that, you know, we had some gaps in the supervision that we were providing to youth who are in our residential program, and they were able to kind of evade our supervision and get into kind of trouble in ways that we should have been able to prevent. And so we learned from that, and ultimately decided that our highest and best opportunity to help children and families and young adults is with our community-based programs. So we effectively just doubled down on that. We put all of our energy into growing our community-based services. So at that time, we were working with about 50 children in a residential program, and a very small number, 20 or 30 in the community, right? But we decided to close our residential program and focus on community-based. And so fast forward to today, we're working right now with 325 children and young adults on any given day. And we've been growing pretty quickly over the past couple years, especially. This is reflective of the fact that, you know, children, families, young adults are struggling today, maybe more than ever. We've built a strong set of services to help these young people and their families. We're tracking them for a year after they leave our programs, which is a unique thing to do. You don't see that much in the nonprofit community. And what we're seeing both in our Intercept program for families who are struggling to keep their children safe and with them, and in our transition age youth services, LifeSet and Independent Living, that better than 80% of them are living in safe and stable housing and either going to school or have jobs a year after they graduate from our programs. And over 90% of them are staying out of trouble with the law. So we think that we're really onto something. We're not perfect. We haven't hung the moon. We're learning all the time. But we're feeling good, we're growing, and we're really, as our whole organization, on a mission to help these young people overcome the challenges that they face and live successfully.
I think recovers was the right word after all. It sounds like that's, I mean, again, you're doing, yeah, you're doing great work. You're doing great work. How can people keep up with the work that you're doing? Obviously, they're listening to this, but later on, is there a website? Are you on social media? Any of that kind of stuff?
Yes. So youthvillages.org/Oregon. You'll read a lot about what we're doing here in our very own state. You can certainly look at the whole website. It's pretty well put together. It talks about our services and programs. We have a local board of directors, and we're always looking for community volunteers that want to help both kind of promote what we're doing and help raise funds and communicate to the broader community. We're also right now working on a bill in the Oregon legislature to help strengthen the set of services for transition age youth. So this is, you know, these are the kids aging out of foster care that we've been talking about. And this is a part of the kind of system, not just in Oregon, but nationally, that gets far less attention than it should. These services are really woefully underfunded and have been for years. And so we've been working with the Department of Human Services, with some state legislators. Senator Sarah Gelser-Bluen has sponsored a bill, Senate Bill 911, that's going to be really important as a part of the solution. We're separately working with legislators on an immediate investment, because the system for young people aging out of foster care is unstable because the services have been so underfunded for so long.
I'm looking at the clock, and unfortunately, it has beaten us once again. I don't know how it does it. I think it must cheat. But we are coming to the end of our half hour. Do you have some closing thoughts that you could share with our listeners?
I honestly, I don't know if my closing thoughts are really for necessarily people that would help fundraise for our nonprofit, but it'd be mostly for a message to maybe other foster youth that are listening, to just, you know, like, I don't know. like we can figure it out together, and that this is a community, and like know that someone has your back, whether it may seem like it or not, and to know that you are not alone. And I think that is like Youth Village's message, and that's also my message to youth who are in the care of the state.
I'll just add that, you know, these youth, they're our neighbors. You know, they're playing with your kids on the playground. They're in your kids' schools, and they might be your kid. And, you know, we're on a mission to help these young people fulfill their potential, of which there is a significant amount of untapped potential. And so, you know, we would love to hear from anyone who cares about this topic. We'd love to help you, to have you, you know, join our movement in some way, and help not just these young people, but help strengthen the community that we all live in.
That was my conversation with Andrew Grover and Ethan Belisco with Youth Villages Oregon. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!
You're listening to KBOO's All 3.